It's The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Come on. Yeah, this the one right here. From temptation, the weaker man facing. You put the spirit in me, I feel the sensation. Die on my feet before I live on my knees, Lord. Deliver me from point A to B like liver breed. Nothing is free, you gotta be a hero to save. They got you working like a slave, from the crypt to the grave. A minimum wage, you barely keep a job or a home, a car or a phone.
Forget. Welcome to hour two of The Truth for sure. When he was, I gotta talk about these two referenda. And I know that I say, I don't tell you guys how to vote. When it comes to these, I'm going to give you the best course of action when it comes to these two referendums. So essentially, I'm going to read them verbatim in a second. Right now, the governor of the state of Wisconsin, remember, the governor occupies a very specific place in Wisconsin politics. He is on the ballot, or she, if we get a lady governor, they're on the ballot in all 72 counties statewide every 4 years when we have a gubernatorial election. We as a collective voting population in Wisconsin, we select our governor. The governor has got particular powers ascribed to him, or maybe one day her, that members of the legislature, the Wisconsin State Senate and the Wisconsin State Assembly simply do not have. Now, collectively, the State Assembly and the State Senate, very powerful bodies, but here's what we have to keep in mind. Robin Voss is the Speaker of the Wisconsin State Assembly. He leads that body of 99 people because he's a Republican and the Republicans have the majority of those seats. Okay. He cannot make up rules for the governor because we in Milwaukee, as an example, we don't vote for Robin Voss. Now, we vote for our members of the State Assembly and the State Senate that represent us here in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. But Robin Voss, who leads the assembly, is not voted for by us here. But he wants to change the entire state constitution, he and his Republican allies, that impacts the one person that is voted for by everyone, which is Tony Evers and the governor. Sometimes the governor receives money. Let's say we have a bunch of like tornadoes. We do have tornadoes in Wisconsin. I'm just using this as an example. And we have a national disaster to where we receive federal funds to help with the cleanup of that tornado, that natural disaster. The governor gets that money. The governor then travels to the different communities that were impacted by the natural disaster and allocates funds accordingly. What the referendum wants to do is change the Constitution so that the governor is removed from the picture. In the event that we have a natural national disaster, the legislature would receive the federal disaster money and then they would decide how that money would get allocated. That's a problem because the legislature cannot get along or decide on literally anything. It makes sense to keep the Constitution as it is so that Governor Evers, who is elected statewide, can maintain the authority and the powers that he has instead of deferring that to the legislature. So what the Republicans in the state want to do is take powers away from the governor simply because he's a Democrat. And I say that because when Scott Walker was governor, they weren't trying to take away his power and his ability to allocate federal funds as he saw fit. Wisconsin voters will be asked to weigh in on two constitutional amendments on August 13th, both targeting the same outcome, to give the state legislature more authority and the governor less power over how federal money is spent. The other thing is, let's just go ahead and assume, let me knock on some wood, now I sure enough don't want to jinx it, that Kamala Harris and Jim Walz get elected and Wisconsin votes blue and they get Kamala Harris and Tim Walz receive the 10 electoral votes that exist here in Wisconsin. Well, there might be some federal money that Wisconsin may need, I don't know, for infrastructure, maybe for job creation in Milwaukee, maybe for after-school activities for our teenagers, maybe for driver's ed. I don't know. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz may decide, hey, Wisconsin needs more money. Let's allocate a $3 billion to Governor Evers. That is a very likely scenario because I'm not sure if you guys are aware, Wisconsin got a tremendous amount of money from President Biden for COVID. We even had a budget surplus. I believe it wasn't just because of smart fiscal management by our budget writing committee in Wisconsin, because Joe Biden was rewarding the Democratic governor of Wisconsin for helping Joe Biden get the electoral votes. And so we got allocated billions of dollars. And what did the governor do? Gave millions of dollars to Black-owned businesses, invested money in Black chambers of commerce, the African-American chambers of commerce, to help create jobs in our community. What the Republican legislature wants to do is stop Tony Evers from doing those kinds of things. I will give Tony credit in this regard. When it comes to Milwaukee, he doesn't play about us. If we need things, if we need allocations of resources, if we need money, he actually is there for us, but he does so very quietly. He's not like an overly flashy political fella, but he absolutely gets the job done. Let's see what else we got here. I'm going to read question one. They're very complicated. Referendum questions are always complicated, so that like a yes vote feels like no and a no vote feels like yes. Question one is going to read, delegation of appropriation power. Shall Section 35, Subsection 1 of Article 4 of the Constitution be created to provide that the legislature may not delegate its sole power to determine how money shall be appropriated? That is a no vote. We do not need to change the Wisconsin State Constitution because the Republicans want to, so they can take power away from the current Democratic governor. Question two, you're going to see in your ballot tomorrow if you go vote or if you voted early. You've seen it already. Allocation of federal money, shall Section 35, Subsection 2 of Article 4 of the Constitution be created to prohibit the governor from allocating any federal monies the governor accepts on behalf of the state without the approval of the legislature by joint resolution or as provided by the legislative rule? They already have agreement and approval when they create the biennial state budgets. The governor has sole power and authority to receive money from the federal government. It's like in a disaster declaration is a perfect example. The legislature doesn't need to decide on where the money goes if a town has been destroyed by a tornado or by a flood, because the governor can react and move much quicker than our 132-person legislature. We do not need to be creating additional constitutional amendments in Wisconsin, because what that does, if these referendum pass, that opens up a whole floodgate for Republicans while they still have power to put things on ballot referendum to totally change the course and the landscape of Wisconsin. So on question one and question two, I am voting no. The first question essentially asks whether to prohibit the legislature from giving up its power to spend money. The second question asks whether to require the governor to acquire legislative approval before spending federal dollars. The issue intensified during the pandemic when Wisconsin received billions of federal dollars. Democratic Governor Tony Evers had free rein to spend money as he saw fit. The Republican-controlled legislature wanted more oversight. That's because he was giving money to Milwaukee. That's why they wanted more oversight, because they probably would not have allowed that. Republicans are supporting the measures urging a yes vote. That should tell you all you need to know. There are more calls for how these dollars are invested. Are we getting out of them what we should? Are they solving the types of problems that we want? State Rep. Robert Wickey, a Republican from Racine, said when introducing the amendments back in 2022, Democrats are campaigning for a no vote. The consequences of this power grab are even worse, Governor Tony Evers said during a news conference on Monday. If these amendments pass, me and any other future governor will be left without the tools we need, especially during a time of crisis. So that essentially wraps up what you may see on your partisan ballot tomorrow. Most of you probably will not have many competitive races. Some of you certainly will. So we will, of course, be talking more about the election tomorrow. But also, for those of you that haven't registered to vote, and believe it or not, there's a lot of people that have not registered to vote. Either their registration lapsed, they haven't voted in a while, or maybe they moved and never re-registered at their new address. I'm going to say this a lot between now and November 5th. I want as many people to register to vote as possible. I have a survey here. It's 25 pages. I read it all this morning, and I want to try and take the important parts of this survey and share them with you. And it's a survey of unregistered Black men in America. and it gives a myriad of reasons why they are unregistered, how they feel about the political process. But there's also some insights in this survey. Now, here's the thing about the survey. It was conducted in March when there was very low voter enthusiasm for both candidates, right? Joe Biden was still in the race. He was running for reelection. So when they took this survey of 1,001 unregistered African-American men in the United States of America, enthusiasm was incredibly low. Okay. So keep that in mind. I don't know how things have changed with Kamala Harris entering the race. I know that I have personally seen, felt, and heard additional enthusiasm, but I don't know how that translates to African-American men. But in this survey, and I'll share the survey in the Hughes Views Facebook group at the end of the program, it basically shows, and I'm going to give you just like a little synopsis of the survey, because I'm very curious when it comes to black men, like our reasons for voting, not voting, why do we vote? You know, why are so many of us voting for Donald Trump, or at least people say they're voting for Donald Trump? And the one thing I got from the 25-page survey, which goes into tremendous detail of why black men are unregistered, will remain unregistered, and what will get them to register to vote, which is also quite fascinating, is that black men see other ways to help improve our communities, our cities, our states, other than voting. Now, there are other demographic groups that see voting as the way to improve cities and counties and their states. The different answers that black men gave in the survey is really, really insightful. Because this is the kind of stuff that African-American men talk about, but the broader society may not be aware of. The other part, though, is they ask these black men, okay, who do you want to hear from? Like, who has the most influence on you to get you to register to vote? That was also very fascinating as well. So we're gonna get into that. But I just, as an African-American man, and like the leadership roles that we are assumed to have, when it comes to voting and participating in elections, like black women, they outpace us by at least 10 percentage points in every single election. In some elections, it's 20 percentage points or more, because I see that black women know that there's a whole bunch of other ways they know that they can be participants in improvements, improving the community. But voting is an absolute like requirement, where black men see all the other things, but not necessarily voting. And I just wonder how this is going to translate into November, because I know my feeling of elation and excitement behind Kamala Harris. And it's partly because of what we are up against and the vision that she represents. Listen, when she ran in 2019, when she was vying for the Democratic nomination, I wasn't supporting her. I was not. I'll be honest with you. Because at the time, we needed someone who was much more established. Not that she wasn't established in her own, you know, political races and positions that she had held, but we had Trump going on, and, you know, Trump was putting all these people on a Supreme Court. And also, it wasn't lost on me that Barack Obama trusted Joe Biden to be his vice president. And if Barack Obama has shown us anything, like, his perspective means something, because Barack Obama vetted these people on our behalf. And from what I saw, Joe Biden never overstepped. He never overshadowed. He was extremely supportive of President Barack Obama. Like, that means a lot to me. And so in those last days and years of the Trump administration, I was selecting Joe Biden as the person I was going to vote for, because he just would have gotten things back to a regular, even level. And here's the thing. He absolutely did. And guess what? He's being a statesman by stepping down and literally handing the keys and the future of the United States over to Kamala Harris. Like, that's a noble thing to do. Because Barack Obama, our first black president, selected Joe Biden to be his running mate. Joe Biden then selects Kamala Harris to be his running mate. He's not running for re-election. Now, he is handing the keys over to her. Like, that is an ideal scenario if there ever was one. So we're going to talk about this survey of African-American men that are unregistered to vote and essentially why they're unregistered. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
So the survey is actually a survey of African Americans that are unregistered, but it's broken out by gender. And as I look into the granular details of this, unregistered Black women are more committed to staying unregistered, like less persuades them to register to vote than Black men, which is a bit of a shock. Now, already in this nation, more African-American women vote, are registered to vote, participate in elections regularly. But Black women that are not registered to vote just don't want to. And I don't know if that is a conversation that I am qualified to have to encourage Black women to vote. And so this survey was taken between March 11th and March 24th of this year. So it's not brand new, but it's recent enough in that Black women who were a part of this survey had lost their right to reproductive health care. Now, depending upon the state in which these African-American women came from, they may have had more access to reproductive care than in some other states. But if the election of Donald Trump and the people that he got to put on the U.S. Supreme Court with the advice and consent of the Senate led to women's reproductive health care being left up to the states. Now, this is just my male brain thinking. If the election of Trump led to taking rights away from women, from Americans, let me just say that, then logically I would think people would say, oh, well, maybe we need to like get in the game now and vote for an alternative to him. But when it comes to Black women, that is not the case. All right, let me give you some metrics here. Survey for Voter Participation Center, 1,001 self-identified, unregistered, but voting eligible African-American citizens. That also is important. So these are folks that are not on probation, not on parole for any felonies. They're not on paper. They are at least 18 years old and they are citizens of the United States. So they are unregistered, but they fit the requirements to register. If you do broad surveys of the Black community, you're going to see there's a number of people that are either in confinement or they're on paper. Because there's some folks that do very little time in confinement, but they got 20-year extended sentences. So they may be out of jail next week, but can't vote until the year 2044. So those folks were not involved in this survey. All right, survey took place from March 11th to March 24th. 25% of the respondents completed the survey via cell phone or landline. 75% of those surveyed completed this poll online. All right, first question. I am registered to vote, but my address is out of date. 17%. So technically, registered but not currently registered. We have a bit of a transient community in some places more than others where people may move a lot. They may have a month-to-month lease or they live here for a year or that the rent went up too much or they got issues with the landlord and unfixing stuff and then they'll go get an apartment somewhere else. Each time you move, you must re-register. However, even though I shouldn't say this, let's say you lived on 27th and Wells. And you move to 20th and Capitol. People may not register with their new address on 20th and Capitol. They may go back to the old location in which they were registered to vote on 27th and Wells, even though they don't live there anymore. You kind of are not supposed to do that. Like, you can register right at the polls. A lot of folks do that, actually. They just haven't gotten around to re-registering, because also if you move, you got to show your ID. And if you live on 20th and Capitol and you go to vote at the polling location for 20th and Capitol, which is probably the Atkinson Street Library right there across the street, they're going to see your license, your address on your license is going to say 27th and Wells. So that they'll still let you register to vote. But when every time you move, you're also supposed to update your ID, which I know a lot of people don't do. But just know that if you register to vote at one address and you move, you technically are a non-registered voter. So that's actually 17% of African Americans. They're registered to vote, but just not at the current address because they moved recently. And then the bulk of the people in this survey, 83%, are not currently registered to vote. Here's some key findings. Two-thirds of unregistered black voters have at least some willingness to register to vote. But for most, the November election is not motivating. So that may have changed when Kamala Harris entered the race. Because remember, this survey was taken in March of 2024 when Joe Biden was the presumptive nominee running for re-election. There is no predominant reason black voters are not registered to vote. Instead, there are a diversity of reasons. Only half of unregistered black people have confidence in the voter registration by mail process. Housing insecurity is common among unregistered African Americans, presents a logistical challenge to voter registration, and along with inflation is a top issue priority among those surveyed. So housing insecurity is either homelessness. We're not supposed to call it homelessness. Unhoused or high level of transience, people moving quite a bit. When offered a choice between voting and finding other ways to make a difference, 66% of unregistered African Americans prefer finding other ways to make a difference. So I'm seeing opportunities here. Now, this doesn't necessarily apply to Wisconsin, because remember, this was a nationwide survey. We don't trust the voter registration by mail process. Well, here you can register to vote in person, so we don't have that to worry about. But when offered a choice between voting and finding other ways to make a difference, two-thirds of unregistered black voters prefer finding other ways to make a difference. How I want us to see it is that instead of looking for other ways besides voting to make a difference, let voting be included in that way to make a difference as well. Let's talk to Norm. You're on 101.7 The Truth. How are you, Norm?
All right, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind, Norm?
Hey, I was listening to Donald Trump. He said, that they took his ideal about tips, but they've been talking about tips for years, ain't they? You know, trying to do something with the tips. So what is he talking about?
Who cares what he's talking about? If people that get tipped, if
my man
Kamala Harris doesn't think that people who make tipped wages should get taxed, I don't care who came up with the idea. The idea is a good one. It's going to help a lot of tip wage workers. I hope she did, Steve.
My man. My man. All right, brother. Have a good one.
You too, Norm. Yeah, I heard something about that. But that's the only real policy pronouncement that makes any sense that Donald Trump has. And why not? That's Kamala Harris wants to take it. Let her take it. What's Trump going to do? Nothing. All right. The strongest messenger. So who can encourage unregistered black folks to vote? I know I try to do it. But if I'm dealing with, and I'm going to generalize some of these results to Milwaukee, because if African-Americans in this city, a number of us are unregistered, if they think there are other ways in which they can make a difference, which, you know what? Because we have activists. We have like an activist community. We have a nonprofit sector that operates in black Milwaukee. And you have people that are working on the ground every single day. They're working with youth. They're working with older adults. They're working on anti-crime initiatives. There's a lot of nonprofit social service work happening in the city. And I can see this, though. If somebody is really committed to the work that they do in the community every day, stuff that we may not even hear about. How I know that work sometimes is bearing fruit is some days there's no homicides. And I'd like to think that on the days in which there's just nothing bad happens, I wish I could say there was a day in Milwaukee where a Kia doesn't get stolen. I'd like to say on those days where everything is very calm and quiet, the community involved people, they're doing their job, and that is how it bears fruit. Side note, I saw a video of a Kia boy. Somebody recorded him and they timed him in a parking lot, middle of the day, broad daylight, sun is shining. Steal a car in 40 seconds. I've never seen it done before. The only thing I even knew about the mechanics of how you steal the cars, whatever they talked about in the Tommy G Kia Boys documentary, which came out, I think, in 2022. The only thing that I knew about that is how they were describing how you peel the steering column back and do all this other stuff. Well, there's a video that shows a young boy, he's a teenage boy, stealing a car, a Kia, in 40 seconds. And as I'm watching this video, and I posted the video in the Hughes Views Facebook group, some people watched it and got very upset, especially those who have had vehicles stolen multiple times. So those folks got very upset. Those cars are made poorly. He just uses simple, he just uses a flathead screwdriver and an iPhone charging cord. That's it. He takes one screwdriver and he pries the top of the passenger window. I've never in my life seen anything like this. I was astonished. I was riveted. So he takes a flathead screwdriver and he pries it at the very top. The window is rolled up, obviously. And he pries the screwdriver in the gap between the window and the door frame. And he hoists it a couple of times. And the window comes out in one piece. And he just throws the window on the ground. Now he jumps in the passenger side of the vehicle, because now the window, it just came out in one piece. He throws it on the ground. He shimmies his little tail over to the driver's seat and just grabs the plastic steering column and just yanks it down and the entire thing falls apart. Okay. Then he reaches in the front pocket of his hooded sweatshirt, pulls out another screwdriver, pops off the ignition where you would put the key, bloop, pops out. And so there's a little slot where he popped the ignition out. He then reaches in his pocket, pulls out an iPhone charging cable, and sticks that in the slot of the ignition that he just popped out. He turns it like a key, puts the vehicle in drive, and takes off. It was that simple, and it only took 40 seconds. That just makes me glad I don't have a Kia, that's for sure. I'm going to take a break, come back. We'll talk to Denise on the other side. Going through this survey of unregistered African Americans and the reasons that they give for not registering to vote. And sometimes they are very committed to never registering to vote. And when I get into the percentages, black women that aren't registered to vote are more committed to never register to vote than black men. At least black men in this survey, anyway, can be influenced by certain factors. But both groups, black men and black women who are unregistered to vote, see other means and other ways to help better their community aside from voting. I want all of us to see that voting, especially for elected officials that see the world as we do, to include that in the things that we do to better our cities and our communities. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Our phone number is 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. I have this survey. Now, it's conducted in March. It's before Kamala Harris became the Democratic nominee. It's a survey of unregistered African Americans. Now, a percentage of them, they were registered, but they moved and they're not registered. That's a new address. That's 17% of the people in this survey of black people. 83% are just not registered to vote at all. And we're digging into some of the reasons why that is. And they break it out by income and by gender. And what I found, I'm going to give you a few more details in a moment. is that unregistered black women are more committed to never registering to vote than black men. It seems like black men are at least amenable to the idea of registering to vote. But both groups, black men and women who are unregistered, think that there are so many other ways in which they can be helpful to improve conditions other than voting. And I'm going to give you some of those reasons in a second. But first, let's talk to Denise. You're on 101.7 The Truth. How are you, Denise?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty fairly well. I was just talking about these Kia kids. We had a happening at a funeral this weekend for my aunt. Her daughter's Kia got stolen in the parking lot of the church with two lot attendants, okay?
Oh, my goodness.
So within an hour, they locate the car. The police locate the car, let me say. And they're sitting on the car waiting for the tow truck to pick it up. And some kids jumped in the car and stole it in front of the police.
You're kidding
it's
me.
Like, I wish I was. Because we're like, okay, she just got to replace her window. She's good. And by the time I get home, they're saying the car got stolen again while the police were sitting there. Bold or what?
And they stole it from a funeral. Yeah, I don't even know how to wrap my head around that. Did the police even chase them? Because you think that if the police are witnessing the theft of a stolen car being stolen again in front of them, did they try to apprehend the suspects or did they let them go?
I don't know what the officers were doing, because I know I had a stolen car in front of my driveway one day, and I called the police, and they come out and they, you know, look at the car, they, you know, check the car out. So they sat there while the tow truck was coming. I don't know if those police were asleep or what. I don't know what they were doing. It's just insane. It's insanity. It's insult to injury that the lot attendants, okay, they're security guards, they're old men, you know, okay. But the police let the car get stolen again?
When was this? It was over this past weekend.
It was Saturday.
Good grief.
It was Saturday. A gray Kia with a Eastern Star medallion on the back of it. I don't know if it was SUV or what, but it's just like, how much injury can this my cousin endure at this point in her life?
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. I'm just as shocked as you, as anybody else who's hearing this story.
But I've seen your postings, and it's like, this is crazy. So they can do this right in front of the police, and the police don't even react.
I'm at a loss for words right now, Denise, but I'm trying to feel your pain here. But at the same time, I'm incredibly shocked, because we've also seen police in certain situations shoot people for less, but then they let them steal the car right in front of them. So
yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. Maybe those cops were having a bad day. Who knows? I hope they find your sister's car. And if they do find it, I hope they're actually able to tow it back to her instead of having it get stolen again.
Yeah. Just wanted to chime in on this. I just don't get it. I don't know what these kids are doing. It's unbelievable.
All right. Thank you for your call, Denise.
You have a great day now.
All right, you too. Hope your sister has a better day than she's been having. That's so wild to me. That's holy. Okay. That's going to distract me. Don't get me started on that, because then I'm going to get into the whole crime and punishment thing. And so when I posted that video that Denise referenced, it's in the Hughes Views Facebook group. The commentary of the people, I think, shows that we are not all on the same page when it comes to how we treat car thieves. And everybody has their right to their opinion. And so some people will see this young man as, oh, he's good with his hands. We need to redirect his energy. And like, they didn't even think about the fact that somebody, it might be working two jobs to pay for that car. That car is how they pick up their children. It's how they go to work. It's how they run errands. It's how they go to school. It's how they live their lives. And it's gone just because a bored kid wanted to take it and joyride and did a tremendous amount of damage to it because he shreds the steering column. He busts the ignition. Like, people don't have a bunch of money. And depending, well, you got to have insurance, but there's no guarantee that the person even had insurance on their vehicle. Do y'all know that if you have a vehicle and it's uninsured and the vehicle gets stolen and it's either totaled or unrecovered? I just want you to know this now. It doesn't mean it's going to change anyone's behavior, but I'm going to say it so it's out there in the universe and it's on the record. And let's say the car was $25,000 and you got a loan. You're financing the car. It's $390 a month. You don't have insurance because you can't afford it. Insurance, by the way, in southeastern Wisconsin, Milwaukee specifically, has gone up on average about 50% over the past 4 years. I wonder why. It's very expensive to insure vehicles, especially in certain zip codes. It's densely populated. There's a lot of vehicles. There's a lot of fender benders, of course, but a lot of cars get stolen. And insurance companies have to pay these exorbitant claims to fix these vehicles that are stolen. So all of us are going to pay more. So there are costs to those of us who haven't had our car stolen. I got a good driving record, knock on wood. My insurance has gone up at least 30%. Now, during the pandemic, we got discounts. Some of y'all may not remember that. So I'm insured with Progressives. I got Progressives insurance. Okay. I got a good little policy with the Progressives, you see. They sent me, no, I think I was with Allstate. I take that back. I switched to Progressive fairly recently. During the pandemic, I had the Allstate insurance. And because everything was closed and nobody was driving and accident claims were down, I got a $200 check sent to me by the Allstate. That was very nice of them. $200. Just because paying my premium, and I pay my insurance either 6 months at a time or a year at a time. And they gave me a little $200 rebate. I ain't getting a $200 rebate now because I went to Progressives because it was less expensive than the Allstates. But then my Progressives, which I got because it's less expensive than the Allstates, went up to a dollar amount where it's the same as the Allstates that I had before I switched to the Progressives. So if you have a vehicle, and a lot of folks can't afford insurance, even though legally in the state of Wisconsin, you're supposed to have the car insurance. You got a $25,000 car, you're paying $390 a month, and that vehicle gets stolen. The finance company and the dealership don't care that your car got stolen. You know that there are people who can't afford car insurance, but you need a car because we don't have enough mass transportation to move people around in Milwaukee. Car got stolen. Car is gone. Car has never been recovered. They still have to pay the money that they owe on that vehicle because the bank does not care that the car got stolen. Remember, you borrowed the money from the bank. You tell the bank, yo, the car got stolen. The bank is like, I don't care. We want our bread. So just a cautionary tale. Take a break. Come back. I want to talk to Carl on the other side. I'm still talking about these reasons that African-Americans that are unregistered to vote, why they remain so, mostly because they see other ways to participate in improving community life aside from voting. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be back shortly.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. It's The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Our phone number is 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. You can call, you can text. Right now, we got a call, and that person's name is Carl. You're on.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, hi.
Yes.
Hi. Hi, Carl.
You hear me?
I can hear you perfect.
You can hear me?
Can you hear me?
All right. First, I want to... Yes, I can hear you, sir. I just want to apologize first because I'm driving and my headset is hooked to my navigation. Every now and then it beeps out, but just bear with me.
We're trying.
Okay. So, okay. When I was 15 years old, I used to steal cars and we was called. And when we stole cars, it was some money. Okay. It was for money when we stole cars, all right? And people needed parts for a car and give them the whole car. So to get a car and to joyride in it, It wasn't what we was doing when we was coming up.
Carl, so that's your phone keeps cutting out, but I think we got the gist of what you're saying, but the connection is bad, though, Carl. We can't hear everything that you're saying.
I know. I apologize. I'm driving, and it's hooked to my GPS.
So you stole cars.
Have a good day, Sherwin.
All right. I don't even know if he needed a call to say that mess. I hope he went to jail. Was he trying to justify stealing cars because they needed the money? I get it. People need money, but you can't harm somebody who probably needs money too, but is not stealing other people's property. I don't know. Maybe it was the way I was brought up. I hate a thief, y'all. There's something about a person who feels entitled to take. Because it's not even like we steal from rich people. People steal from folks that don't even have anything, or what they have is all they've got. And for that to be stolen it's highly offensive. It is. That I kind of wish we would have. Maybe there was a moral to his story. Maybe it's like, I learned don't steal cars anymore because somebody shot me. I learned, I went to jail for 2 years. That's when I decided no longer to steal cars. But he just made it seem like we needed money, so we stole cars. Is that why they're doing it now, or are they joyriding? I don't know. I'm supposed to be talking about unregistered black voters. But then when I get a call like that, like, how am I supposed to react to that? When he was younger, he used to steal cars. I wonder if his car got stolen. Or Carl would say, Oh, they stole my car. Reminds me of my youth. I remember the good old days. All right, well, let me call the police and report my vehicle stolen. Oh, shucks. That's not good. And I wondered, do car thieves mentor each other? They have to. I wonder if Carl mentored other car thieves. Okay. I want to read some of these YouTube comments. JD the Poet said they have third and fourth parties in smaller countries. However, they still have to caucus with the other parties to get legislation passed or even consider. The way we do democracy in the United States is very different than they do it in other countries. We, for the most part, bipartisan, bicameral form of a democratic republic, a constitutionally mandated democratic republic, constitutionally mandated because we got a bunch of different constitutions. So you've got the U.S. Constitution, which most of you have never read. It's got 27 amendments in it. Then the state of Wisconsin has a constitution. Again, fewer of you have read that one. And then the city and county of Milwaukee have charters, which are essentially constitutions as well, but they set rules and set guidelines, and all of those other constitutions, whether it be state or a county or city charter, cannot have rules and or regulations that supersede that of the U.S. Constitution. But the Constitution gives us like a legal and judicial framework for the creation of a place, and we live under those rules. All right, anything else notable here? 1017, the truth. Sure, when Ross Perot was a third party candidate, why was it important that voters knew he had $1 billion? That was all he said at the time. I think he was trying to illustrate that he was a businessman and could run the federal government like a successful business. I hope that we have learned that you do not run governments like for-profit businesses. Governments take in tax revenue and turn that tax revenue into resources and services. There's not supposed to be a profit. And if there is a profit, governments are nonprofit organizations, FYI. If there is a profit, then we either reinvest that profit in people, in infrastructure, in college, universities, in school, in education, or you give the money back to the people. We should be running governments with zero deficits, so zero money left over. So there's money left over, allocate it to something that is going to be of benefit to the people, that can help us become more competitive, that can create more jobs, that can lower taxes, et cetera. Or every now and again, it's been a while, since COVID, but you get a rebate. In the year 2001, George W. Bush gave us federal tax rebates, because after September 11th, the economy essentially tanked. And George Bush wanted to stimulate the American economy, especially ahead of Christmas time, and everybody got rebate checks. Tommy Thompson, who was governor at the time, did the exact same thing. So if there is money left over, if there's a surplus, we recently had a surplus. If I'm not mistaken, I think we still do, because the governor and the legislature can't agree how to spend the additional money that we have here in the state of Wisconsin. We have extra money, but we shouldn't want some, because the whole business thing, like, government doesn't work like business. It does. It shouldn't. It's not profits and losses. It's tax revenue and fees that then get invested in, like, locally police and fire and snow removal and sanitation and the garbage trucks. And you got to have the water when you turn on the water pipes and the water comes out. That's the kind of stuff that we spend our money on. We shouldn't be running the city of Milwaukee like a business, because if so, who's going to profit from it? We're not going to profit from it. All right, let me get back to this survey here. It's taking me a long time to get through this survey. All right. How would you describe your current connection to politics in your country, state, city, or town? This is a survey of unregistered African-American people. 31% say optimistic. I believe that working together, we can make a change. Next category is disengaged. Politics is not for me. That's 25% of the respondents. They said that. Next category is 14% say they're disillusioned. They don't believe we will be able to fix things by voting. That's unfortunate. Some said that they're locally motivated. 11% of the respondents of these African-American unregistered voters said they're locally motivated. I like working with others to benefit my local community. And 15% say they are simply overwhelmed. I have a lot on my plate and don't always have time to fully participate in elections. I didn't think that elections were that time consuming. And maybe it's me. This is also coming from a guy with who's the majority of my workday is I'm done at noon. And I do other stuff now, of course. But if there is a day in which you can legally take time off of work, you know your employer can't penalize you if you take time off of work to go and vote. And we also have mail-in voting. We have early voting, which is about 10 days before the election. So maybe it's not as time consuming as people may think. The truth for sure when he was, we'll be back for hour three.